And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace on this Friday. Really excited to bring you the show today as we look ahead to the weekend. The suit, Chase McCabe, is off today. D-Mace will be along here in just a few moments, and we will look forward to picking his brain today. We're going to do it all. We've got our weekly conversation with Eddie George coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll have the Ask D-Mace segment at 12:30, which has become must-listen-to radio, and you can get involved in that as well. And look, I realize it. D-Mace is on for 4 hours, so people ask D-Mace. We ask D-Mace a lot, but we really get it down to the nitty-gritty at 12:30 because we ask technical questions from the football side, historical questions based on maybe his experiences in his career, and also just fun life questions as well. So in the meantime, before we get D-Mace in here, Robbie Stanley on the carryover for the one segment is still with us from Robbie and Rex. So Robbie, how's your stamina right now? You did the complete show. It's Friday. I mean, you could easily just bolt out of here and be done.
Willie, I'm doing great. We had Jeremy Piven in, comedian and actor, at 8:45. He infused energy into the program.
Oh, man.
A lot of energy with that guy. So I'm feeling good. I'm ready to go.
That guy is really good. That guy has been – I mean, I go back to, like, some of the movies he was in.
Oh, yeah.
When he was younger, even before the what was the HBO show?
Entourage?
Entourage, yeah. He was great in that. But, man, yeah.
First thing I thought of was old school. I was like, oh, yeah, he was in old school.
How about that? He was there. Gross Point Blank?
Oh, yeah.
Anyone? Yeah, that's a good one. It's one of my faves there. So, Rob, you've been hanging out. I know we're talking so much Titans right now, and it's like crisis in week two here. With them going to Buffalo, 10-point underdog, the rough ending to the game against the Giants, all of the issues they have. And it's a little bit of a lighter week in college football, not a lot of marquee matchups here. But we really haven't gotten into the Predators much yet. Training camp officially will start next week, and then before you know it, they'll be off and running here. But you've been watching some of their informal workouts that they've been doing in preparation, and it's interesting to sort of set some of the themes that we're going to see here in a few days.
It's been really interesting, and they were basically out there in informals the other day and had just a full scrimmage going on, 5-on-5. And pretty much every one of the regulars are back at this point. I didn't see Trennan out there the other day, so we'll see as camp gets closer, you know, what that looks like as they move forward here. But pretty much everybody's back. They look great. A lot of people reacted the other day to the real deal, James Neal being out there with him. He's on a PTO with Columbus, so I'm interested to see, you know, can he make the team and stick around at the NHL level? He was at the AHL level a little bit to end the season last year. But, you know, it's interesting to watch. One thing that stood out to me, and maybe this was just a one scrimmage thing and you're just playing out there and you end up in the situation a lot, but Roman Josi playing a whole lot on his offside the other day, Matthias Ekholm playing a whole lot on his offside the other day, too, and I don't know what that means. Maybe they just got caught out there a few times, but it was pretty consistent that they were doing that. And, you know, obviously, when you think about the top four setup on defense, like, you know, we'll get to Nino Niederreiter, who looks really good here in just a few minutes, but it is going to be interesting. If you go, like, the traditional top four setup with the new-look defense core that they have, and if you believe your four best defensemen, three of those are definitely Josi, Ekholm, and McDonough, which I believe, you know, if you're playing those four guys a lot, somebody's going to have to play on their offside, and I'm interested to see who that's going to be. I just kind of in my mind's eye thought it was going to be Ekholm because we've seen him do it, and he's done it pretty well before, but I found that to be pretty interesting. But they, you know, a lot of familiarity. Matt Duchene still looks great. Forsberg looks great, and I think Predators fans are really going to enjoy the way that Nino Niederreiter plays the game this year.
I do think that will be one of the bigger things to watch in camp is who ends up meshing with whom. And that is an interesting observation that they've both been trying it out. Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm playing their quote-unquote offside. So who's the best fit with Ryan McDonough? That's going to be the question. How does it because I in my mind, have been kind of visualizing Ekholm, but the whole summer when they acquired PK Subban, I was envisioning Subban and Josi being the pair, and it really didn't happen. They almost never played together. They were better off on separate pairs. So maybe you don't know until you actually get out there and try it. So they'll probably spend some days at camp trying to figure out and try different things. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw an exhibition game where you had it one way, and then the next exhibition game you tried it a different way.
Yeah, I think that absolutely could be the way that things go. And, you know, some of this is also with the younger guys. I mean, they, you know, Tomasino, what sort of a role can he play? You know, Cody Glass has been out there a lot. Eli Tolvanen's been out there a lot. You know, they've gotten in some work even before most of the other veteran guys have come out there at the skate. Like, I think if you're a guy like Cody Glass and Eli Tolvanen to a certain degree, like, you know, this is an important camp from the standpoint of, like, we know Tolvanen's going to be on the team. Like, Cody Glass needs to make this team out of camp. Like, this should be a time where he makes the team out of camp. And I think there's a spot that's available and is there for him. But, you know, there are guys like Michael McCarron still hanging around. I mean, they've, you know, Sanford they brought in, be a free agency in the offseason as well. I think he's going to have a role with this team. So there are some spots at the bottom part of the roster that as we head into camp here, especially at forward, are going to be really interesting to watch. And I'll say this, Tomasino, he looks quick out there. Looks really good so far.
He's a big jump from him would mean a ton, I think, in the big picture. You also mentioned Nino Niederreiter. We had a fun conversation on Monday. Roman Yossi stopped by our table out at Brent Peterson's golf tournament for the Predators Foundation, Peterson for Parkinson's. And he talked about, he was pretty open about when Nino Niederreiter, after the first couple of days of free agency, didn't get into that first wave and he was out there. Roman Yossi said, once I got the go-ahead from the team, hey, we're interested, I was not afraid to give him a call. He's known him for a long time, and he pretty much sold him on coming to Nashville. So he's a key guy, so you've been watching him.
He's looked really good, and it's an interesting addition from the standpoint of it helps you offensively, obviously, which is what you're looking for in a top six player. And I'm interested to see where exactly he fits in and where he plays, whether that's with Granlund or whether that's with Johansson. But also, I think it's more than just the offensive pop. I think it's the way he plays the game. Like, the way he plays the game, the style, the physicality that he brings, you know, the power forward type game that he has, I think that fits right in line with what John Hines wants to do. So it's more than just you look at his traditional stats and you're like, all right, well, he's pretty much a 20-goal guy every year. He's right around that, which is great. Like, the Predators definitely need that as a part of their top six. But he makes a lot of smaller winning plays that I think go under the radar that can serve this team really well. And if you remember him from the playoff series a couple of years ago against Carolina, kind of pain in the butt to play against, which I think definitely fits right into what John Hines wants to be. So he's a really intriguing guy to me. Like, I don't think he's going to go out there and score like 35 goals or anything for the Predators, but to me, if he plays exactly the way he's played in Carolina, which is basically a 20, 22-goal guy, you know, pretty good playmaker as well, can be on that second power play unit, but also the way that he plays, I think that fits in really well with the Predators. So I'm interested to see who he plays with.
That's one of the things. I agree. Where he plays, who he plays with has to be sorted out, but the way he plays definitely is a fit. One of the best things that the Hurricanes have done over the last few years is forecheck, and he's a big-time part of that. He's a great forechecker, and it's also something that Nashville wants to do. What I'm intrigued about is Niederreiter's that edgy player. Carolina comes at you, they're just in your face with speed and tenacity. It's not as much the physicality.
Yep.
But Niederreiter now has a little bit of that edge to his game, and now he's backed by McCarron and Trennan and Janot and guys who can back it up with some physicality.
Yeah, throwing Sanford hitting in there too. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, what he can do in that role on a team like this, as opposed to where he's been, because he was obviously, that's one of the more lopsided trades of the last 5 to 7 years when Carolina acquired him for Victor Rask. I mean, that was a big upgrade. And so now, so this is Niederreiter's fourth team. Yep. So he's been used to changing teams over the course of his career. Once upon a time, he played with Mikhail Granlund as young players in Minnesota. And so I was looking at the history there. They did play together some, but it's been a long, long time. So I don't know if you just automatically say there's chemistry there. You'd have to reinvent or rediscover some chemistry, but definitely something to look for. Let's talk about the rookies. They're playing in their camp right now. They'll have the prospect games that they'll go down. It's always intriguing. I can remember when Philip Forsberg was in these games. We saw Tomasino in these games. We saw Dante Fabbro a couple years ago. A lot of those guys have come up through the ranks playing in these practices here. So this is the next step in the process. I'm curious about a couple of guys, so I'll bounce them off you. Last year, people may not remember, but Igor Afanasyev was one of the last cuts, and then he really didn't have a huge season in Milwaukee, which happens sometimes.
Yep.
But he's an important guy in the future. This is a big year for him. Is he a prospect, or has he lost a little bit of the luster? We'll find out.
We're going to find out about him. I mean, the thing you love about him is the size that he brings to the table. He's a good playmaker, a good finisher, but he's a big guy. So anytime you can get somebody at that size that can skate, you feel pretty good about. Like you said, he was one of the last cuts last year at training camp. You know, I thought he was okay in Milwaukee last year, and talking to people down there a little bit about him, maybe didn't pop the way that they thought he would last year in Milwaukee. So this is a big camp for him in terms of, can you put yourself in a position where you're challenging for a roster spot out of camp? I think there's only so many roster spots that are available and up for competition for the Predators based on the way that their team looks right now. But can you force your way into that conversation? At least, I mean, he didn't even get called up last year. So can you force your way into an early call-up situation if you're Afanasyev as well? You know, he's talked about it. He's ready to go out there and prove that he belongs. This is a huge camp for him. He needs to impress out there to the way. And I think unless he just blows it up at camp, you're probably going to see him go back down in Milwaukee to begin the season. And if that's the case, how do you handle that if you're him? Can you be productive from the jump?
I think that is an underrated thing. You kind of, like, we love to see who makes the team on day one. But, like, for example, Cody Glass made the opening day roster last year, but he was gone after two games, and then we didn't see him for months after that. But he did, to his credit, go down and have a really good season in Milwaukee. But if you can put yourself in the position to where once that spot opens up, you're the guy that they're calling to, that's sort of, I think, what I'm looking at for Afanasyev. The other guy that everybody's been buzzing about is Parsonen, this kid from Finland who was a low-round pick that just has really come on like gangbusters the last couple of years. And when I hear the term NHL-ready being thrown around for a guy, that was kind of the label on him during the Futures game. You know, that week when they were here in the summer, he was the guy everybody's saying, hey, watch him. He's probably the closest to making the NHL, which surprised me a little bit.
Well, he's a seventh-round pick back in 2019. And, you know, you take guys like that and you never really know how it's going to pan out. Most of them don't work out and they don't make it to the NHL. But, you know, you look at the league. I mean, he's been playing over in Finland, and he was playing in the Finnish Elite League, the same league that Alexander Barkov was lighting it up before he joined the Florida Panthers and was drafted that year. And look, I'm not comparing him to Barkov or anything like that, but I mean, he did have 32 points in 41 games. That's a grown man's league last year at 21 years old. So he's a really intriguing guy, bigger guy, 6'2", about 200 pounds. So I agree. Like, he's intriguing from the standpoint of, can he force his way into the conversation? A lot of times when you start to play against, you know, older competition, which he's done, that translates, I think, a little quicker to the NHL level. He's handled that well. Now can you handle the speed of the NHL? That's going to be something to monitor, but give him credit. I mean, he's come basically out of nowhere, and the last couple of years has played really well, where all of a sudden, if you're David Poile, you're looking around and saying, pretty good seventh-round pick that's turned out here.
You love when those guys come around. Once upon a time, those guys like Zetterberg and Datsyuk. I'm not saying he's going to be like that.
Hornquist,
I mean, obviously Pekarinen, but like if you get a low round pick that hits, man, that has everything fall into line. All right, Robbie, before we let you go, a lot of rumblings about Nathan McKinnon's contract. How big is it going to be? It's going to get done. It does look like the vibe is it'll be done before the season starts. So we know it's going to be $10 million or more based on what they've said.
Oh, yeah.
But is it 10 or is it like 12.5? 12.5 would be highest paid player kind of stuff. But like every dollar counts. Like if you're the rest of the Central Division or the rest of the West, you want that to be as high as it can because that might squeeze out one of their, you know, key players in the middle of their roster.
Well, the highest paid player in the league right now is Connor McDavid, and he's at 12.5. And I think everybody would agree Connor McDavid is probably the best player in the league. But if I'm Nathan McKinnon and I'm his camp and I'm saying, okay, that's fine if you think that. We just want to stay in the cup, and I was a pretty huge part of it. So I think it's going to creep more towards the $11 million range somewhere in there. And like you said, I mean, you know, the idea of him playing for Colorado for another 8 years, you don't like it if you're another team. But if he's going to be there anyway, let's just drive that price up.
Drive it up.
Dismantle the rest of the team.
That's right. I mean, you see the issues that teams like the Maple Leafs are having. When they have a lot of high-end guys and it takes up a big percentage, it's harder to make the rest of your roster work. It is a challenge. Robbie, thanks for sticking around. Looking forward to the season coming around here. And have the rest of the weekend to rest up. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Sounds good. Thanks, Willie.
All right. That's Robbie from Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, who hosts Monday through Friday, doing a little overtime with us. D-Mace will join us when we come back on the other side. We'll get into last night's game between the Chargers and the Chiefs. We'll find out what we learned from that. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to go up to Buffalo, and we will check in with the Bills. Their play-by-play voice, John Murphy, is going to join us at 10:30. So stay tuned. We got a lot coming here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, ESPN 102.5, the game 106.3, and the game Nashville app.
Nobody's there to slow him down. Picks up that momentum. Big guy to bring down.
Again, quick tempo. And picked off at the one-yard line. That is Watson out in front. Sneed to protect him as well. All the way for the touchdown. Unreal.
Watch what happens where you use outside leverage. He sits to the outside, and that's what Herbert sees. It's a top of the route. He thinks he's got inside, so he's got a chance to throw to the inside, and instead of being able to put it there, it's jumped. Perfect timing. Great job by a rookie in Watson to step in front of that throw.
Definitely the play of the game last night in the victory for the Chiefs over the Chargers. In week two, the first Amazon Prime Thursday night game of the season. Derek Mason has joined me, Willie Donick here on this Friday. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, ESPN 102.5, the game. Don't forget, you can check in on our phone or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And we are right here in the Hillside Medical Game Studio. D-Mace, happy Friday to you.
Hey, happy Friday, Willie.
So tell people what you're doing. You were watching your niece here this morning.
Yeah, my niece, she asked if I would go to her PE day a few weeks ago. Well, actually, like a month or two ago. And I agreed to go to it. So today was the day. PE, you know, all the kids are excited. There's about 40 kids in there, two classes. So it's about 40, 45 kids in there, and these kids and parents, and you never really, you know, when you walk into a gym room after so many years, especially elementary, you realize it's not as big as what I thought it was when I was a kid. But then actually when you have to start doing activities in it, then you realize, yeah, it's still big. So we had to run around, you know, the basketball court twice, and then we had to do different exercises, push-ups, crunches, squats, you know. Ooh. So every time you do an exercise, you had to run around the gym twice. And then we played bowling, which was really fun. Then we played sort of knock the pins down, where you had your own little circle, your pin, and you had to protect your pin from everybody else throwing balls trying to knock down your pin. It was fun. I had a really good time. So and those kids had a wonderful time, and you know, met the coaches there. They were great. So had a good old time, man.
All right. So very good. Very good stuff. Let's talk about last night's game between the Chiefs and the Chargers. We asked the question yesterday when we were previewing the game, would we see something different from the Chargers? When you have to win at Arrowhead Stadium, you're going to have to do well at crunch time. At the end of the night, if you had Justin Herbert as your fantasy quarterback, he got you a lot of points. He lost some on that pass we just listened to. But at the end of the day, even though he was gutsy, you know, he had the injury at the end of the game that he was trying to overcome, and he led him down the field and they scored. But the Chargers at the end of the night had the same kind of result that we're used to seeing a lot, losing the close game.
Yeah. You know the phrase Clemsoning. We all know yeah. that. And Dabo finally got over that hump. And no one, you know, reference Clemsoning anymore on that campus. Well, we should start referencing Charger, because this is what the Chargers do. As good as they are, both offensively and defensively, as good as the coach is calling plays from an offensive standpoint, they always manage to do something at a critical point of the game that costs them. So when you talk about teams that have the potential to go to the Super Bowl or quarterbacks that are ascending, there's no way you can put Herbert in front of Mahomes, Josh Allen, those three or four top quarterbacks. There's no way you can put him next to them. It's them, and then there's a space or two, and then you put Herbert. You put Burrow in front of Herbert, actually, because this is what the Chargers do. They play well throughout the game. You think, oh, my goodness, this team has it. And then at the end, they do something that messes it up. So, I mean, until that stops happening, then you always look at the Chargers as, yeah, they're a good team, but Herbert's a good quarterback, but, you know, he has to get over that hump and that stigma of, you know, and not all of it's his fault. He's only in his second year. But I'm saying that team and him are going to have to get over that stigma of, yeah, they're good, but they always manage to do something at the end, no matter if they got LT, no matter if they got Drew Brees. It doesn't matter who's the quarterback. Or who's the coach, or what Hall of Fame player they have. Junior said, it doesn't matter. They always do something in the end that cost them the game. But that was a really good game last night. It was a really good. And Kansas City, they have problems in the secondary. And they have problems they're sort of in the same boat as the Titans, in a sense, from a skilled player standpoint. The only difference is the Kansas City Chiefs have a Hall of Fame tight end in Kelce. Mm-hmm. The Titans don't, but they still have the same problems trying to find a playmaker.
Without Tyreek Hill.
Yeah,
that was going to be one of my questions for you.
Nico
Hartman
is not a playmaker. Scantley hasn't consistently proven he's a playmaker. The kid that came from Pittsburgh, I mean, his best years
Juju.
Are behind. Yeah, Juju. Yeah. His best years are behind him. They got to find a playmaker on the outside for Patrick Mahomes because right now they don't have it. Hmm. They got some good players, but not a playmaker like Tyreek Hill.
So you want to see more, even though they've done well. I mean, here they are 2-0. They're probably sitting there going, got to feel pretty good about the post Tyreek Hill situation. But week to week, that is something to watch for. Another thing that I observed. With Herbert at the end of the game, of course, he took some shots. He will hold that ball.
Oh yeah,
and they don't have a great offensive line. Mm-hmm. He was under a lot of heat, and it's almost like with Burrow, you take for granted that he's so good that he's still going to excel despite the fact that that's maybe one of the weaker units on their team. But can he hold up? Right at the end, he was hurting. There, yeah. So that would be a concern of mine if I'm the Chargers. Is how often can he sit back there? He'll hold the ball. He makes plays, but he's going to take some punishment.
Well, he gutted it out and he made some crucial throws. Now, I'm still wondering why he made the third and two throw to the ground where he could walk for the first down. I didn't understand that.
Like, did he just have a shooting pain or something?
Yeah, it must have been.
Somebody took a voodoo doll or something. Like,
and he just like.
There's nobody near
him. He lost all awareness of where he was on the field because he could have ran for the first down. And he just like. You saw it was almost like one of those moments where you're about to get sacked, so you just got to throw the ball away, or you're running out of bounds, so you got to throw the ball away. That's what he did. And it was like, dude, you got like 5 yards. It's 2 yards to get the first down. You got 5 yards clear to get the first down. So that was one of those plays. Like, man, what were you thinking?
Was going on there?
What was going on
and
in your brain?
And, of course, the next play, when you think he's, you know, he can't even
throws a dart down the middle of the field.
Threw a bullet for a touchdown. It was on fourth down. That
yeah,
was
this
really
is
something.
What he was like last night, guys.
Nothing is over! Nothing!
It's over, John. It's over! Little Rambo there. Okay, we're going to come back to this a little bit later. I want to get D-Mace's take on the broadcast. It was just out of curiosity, and we'd love to hear from all of you on the call or text line, 615-737-1025. Feedback on what you thought on the first Amazon broadcast, good, bad, whatever. I'm sure there's some things that they want to work on. But in the meantime, when we come back, we'll go up to Buffalo, and the fine play-by-play announcer, John Murphy, is going to join us. And we'll see what's going on up there as we get prepared for Monday night the Titans and the Bills. Titans, not a great injury report. We'll have more on that during the 11 o'clock hour as we get the check in there on their media availability, but we'll see how that evolves from now until Monday night. Stay tuned. We're just getting cranking here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. You might even see Derek Mason with a little dance move or two there, as we saw.
Yeah.
Willie Donick, former Titans receiver Derek Mason, on the show with you on this Friday. And we head up to Buffalo, and we talk to John Murphy, who is the play-by-play voice for the Buffalo Bills. Times are good up in Buffalo for sure as we count down to Monday night. John, thanks for joining us once again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, John, you know, it's so interesting, you know, for the Bills right now. It's hard to find any weaknesses. I mean, I would have to think the mood up there is really, really good. But if you had to look at any kind of, you know, concern or anything like that, can you even find one at this point?
Yeah, I mean, come on, you don't have to look that far. I mean, they turned it over four times in the opener 8 days ago in Los Angeles and still managed to win by 21 points, which is pretty impressive. But they were a little bit sloppy with the football. That's a weakness. I think for as much longer as cornerback Tre'Davious White is out, the Bills are always going to be concerned about their cornerback position. Tre'Davious White, one of the top cornerbacks in the league, is on injured reserve and still has to miss at least three more games before he can come back and practice. They had a couple of rookies splitting time at one cornerback spot and Dane Jackson, the other cornerback, last week. So that'll be a concern. They're not perfect by any means, and they had a really good night to open things up. But, man, the season is so long and things can happen, and I don't think they're taking anything for granted, including the Tennessee Titans on Monday.
One of the things we were looking for on that first Thursday night was to see how much, if any, they decided to just try to turn and run the ball a little bit more to take some pressure off of John Allen. As it turned out, they did so well in the passing game, and by the end of the night, Josh Allen ends up still being their leading runner. But do you think that there's a basis there for a better running attack to be a little bit more versatile?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they've kind of got a running back by committee these days with now he's a bit of a veteran. Singletary is the top running back. They've got a couple of younger guys who will get reps as well. And, you know, there's talk up here that maybe Josh is running the ball too much and that they're putting him at risk. But I think it's a little early for that. He's still 26 years old. He's in the fifth year of his career. There's going to come a point, and it's coming probably fairly soon, where they don't want to expose him to injury as much as they have. But, look, he's their best short yardage running back. He was going into the draft this past year in April. There was talk about how the Bills needed a really good short yardage running back, and I'm thinking, well, they have a good short yardage running back, and he happens to be their quarterback, too. I mean, he's big and physical, and he still is young, just 26 years old. I think they can use him as a weapon, and he is a weapon when he runs a football as well as when he throws it, and they can continue to use him as a weapon moving forward, I think. They've got to be a little careful, but I think he'll still be something that teams are going to have to account for.
We'll talk with John Murphy, Bills play-by-play analyst. Now, John, look at it. You just brought up the running game, and I think I saw a stat with Josh Allen that he's been hit the second most of any quarterback because of his ability to run the football. And I know you said they want to minimize him taking those shots, but he's young and he feels, hey, listen, if I'm going to win, then these are the things that I need to do. Why haven't they been able to get that running back situation straightened out? Because they've had some running backs in the past, some big bruising running backs in the past, but it just seems like the last couple of years they've relied heavy on Josh Allen to run.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be an overstatement to say they've got to get the running back situation straightened out. They have good running backs. Devin Singletary is a good player and had a very productive second half of last season. I think they're going to lean on him. They drafted James Cook in the second round this year, a guy who is a weapon coming out of the backfield as a pass receiver and is and is getting to be a better player. I mean, I think I don't think it's a situation that needs a revamp or anything. This is mm-hmm. who they're going with. It's not like it's a deficit of talent there at running back. They have three pretty good ones. They will sprinkle them all into the game, I'm sure, on Monday night and see. I think they kind of leave themselves open to, who's got the hot hand. I mean, that's part of it, too. But let's face it, the Bills are a passing team. You know, they have Josh Allen, one of the best passers in the NFL, and they have good receivers. And I think they know that they want to throw the ball first and foremost and run it second. So as long as that's the formula, I think they'll stay with the three guys they have, James Cook, the rookie, Devin Singletary, and Zach Moss. So I don't think it's something that needs fixing or anything. I think they're pretty good with the lineup they have.
Now, we know they have one of the best receivers in the National Football League. To me, he's a top two or three receiver in Stephon Diggs. But they've always been looking for that second guy. Emmanuel Sanders was really good for them last year. Cole Beasley caught a bunch of passes last year as well. But Gabe Davis came on late last year, and then he showed up again big in their first game. Did everyone in the organization, did they notice that this is what this kid will become?
No, I think I can't say I did. I mean, uh-huh. He's in his third year now. He was, a mid-round draft pick out of Central Florida and exploded onto the scene, really, with his performance in the Bills' playoff loss at Kansas City last January. Caught four touchdowns, and he was virtually unstoppable. Now, he benefits a lot from all the attention that opponents focus on the Stephon Diggs, but Gabe Davis is a good player in his own right and can make plays. And he's not excessively fast or elusive, but he gets open and he makes plays. He's really good in the red zone with his size. He's 6'2", 210 pounds. It surprised me going back to late last year and especially in the playoff game how much of a factor Gabe Davis was. And Beasley is gone. They have another good group of receivers, though, at kind of the nickel receiver. Isaiah McKenzie is a good player, had a breakout game against the Patriots last December. And Jamison Crowder, an NFL veteran, backs him up. And they've sort of got a job split going on, too, as, nickel receiver, the third receiver on the field for the Bills. So they have a good group of receivers, I think. They have a young guy who was inactive last week and didn't play, but I think before the season's out, the Bills are going to use one of the young guys they have. Khalil Shakir was a fourth-round pick this year. They have a good group, and they're well-coached, and I think they feel like they're pretty well set at receiver.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. Now, I'm sure a lot of talk there has been to stop the Titans' run game. And are they looking at it more so of, hey, listen, we don't care what many are saying about Derrick Henry, we're going to approach this as if this was the Derrick Henry we saw last year. Is that the approach of the Buffalo Bills in this game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not privy to their game plan, but I know that based on the conversations I've had with people, including Coach McDermott this mm-hmm. morning, they think he's the main threat, and he is. I mean, he's an outlier, as McDermott called him when we talked today. You know, he's kind of a throwback to, Jim Brown, and all that's been written and said about Derrick Henry. You guys know that. So I think they view him as a dangerous force, a guy who has hurt the Bills in the past. What, do you have a 76-yard touchdown run last year in October in Nashville against the Bills? And they know he's capable of that. I think they're aware of the fact that he didn't do a whole lot against the Giants this past week, and that maybe the Titans are going to come into this game saying we've got to get Derrick Henry, our number one weapon, going, and they might focus on that going into this game.
John, before we let you go, we were looking at the NFL Network, and I saw Von Miller talking to the crew on their show. So far, it looks like a great fit. Just tell me what your first impression of him is, since he's been in Bills camp.
Yeah, he didn't play at all in preseason, and so it was tough to get any impressions, but he had a great game against the Rams 8 days ago. And the one thing about Von Miller, which I didn't know about him or wasn't aware of, but he's become a really good leader, and I think his Super Bowl experience now with a couple of Super Bowl wins with Denver and last year with the Rams have sort of transformed him into a veteran leader. For instance, the Bills have a former first-round pick, Greg Russo, in his second year, and Von Miller has sort of taken him under his wing sits next to him in meetings and explains the ways of the NFL to him. I didn't realize that Von Miller had that side to him, that he was that much of a leader, that much of a veteran presence who was willing to counsel some of his teammates. So that's a good thing. He's still a great player. I think the Bills have a pretty solid 7 or 8-man defensive line rotation, so they're going to be careful not to overwork Von Miller at age 33. And, you know, they're just getting started with him, and he's just getting started, so it remains to be seen. But I think they'll kind of give him a chance to, you know, to stay healthy and not get exposed to too many reps and take advantage of his leadership and mentoring skills, which he's already demonstrated are pretty solid.
John, can't wait to watch this game on Monday. Thanks a lot for your insight. As always, have fun, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
All right, John Murphy, the fine play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills, joining us here on the show. When we come back, we'll get back into the Thursday night game and our impressions of the broadcast. In fact, I would love to get a few people on our text line weighing in. What'd you think? And I'll give you my perspective on it. Yes, I did watch the game on it. I did have the Amazon Prime subscription through my wife and daughter, who do a little bit more time on that website than I do. But I got access to the game. I got a couple of thoughts. What did you think? 615-737-1025. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll check in on the Titans and find out what's happening over there. Some press conferences scheduled. We'll hear from some of the coordinators, get the latest on the injury situation. Remember, this is not your normal Friday with the game being on Monday. There's a little more time to prepare, and hopefully they get some guys back on the field. A couple of noticeable absences yesterday, and that's not a good thing. You're listening to Chase, Willie, and D. Mace here from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. On the line with us is Lee DeLeon. He is the assistant athletic director over at Middle Tennessee. Big game, Middle Tennessee, Tennessee State. We're going to talk to Eddie George with our weekly conversation with Derek at 1 o'clock today. Lee, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I apologize in advance for not being nearly as cool as Eddie George, but you got what you got. So.
That's okay. That's okay, Lee. But you know what? I can remember when I was a freshman at Vanderbilt way, way back, I didn't know much about the Middle Tennessee-Tennessee State game, but I remember within just a week or two of me being on campus, the two teams used to play at Vanderbilt Stadium. It was a great crowd. We went over to the game. I had not ever seen either team play in my lifetime, and it was fantastic. They used to be great conference rivals here, so this will be throwback today or tomorrow.
That's right. You know, I've only been here since November. I got hired as the deputy athletic director by Chris Massaro right after Thanksgiving, and I've heard a lot about the old OVC conference days and when Tennessee State and MTSU were in the same league. I heard that it got pretty heated in the day, so we're excited to renew that rivalry.
So tell people what's going on at Floyd Stadium this weekend.
We got a lot going on. I got a whole list here. I want to make sure that I keep it quick, but we've got a parachute company jumping in with the game ball before kickoff, so make sure you come 15 minutes early for the really cool high-flying game ball presentation.
Wow, hold on. Now, D-Mace, are you a parachuter, or is this, you're not involved in this, are you?
No, but I have, you know, skydived.
You skydived before?
Yes, I have.
Oh, my goodness, so they could have called you.
Yeah, they could have called me. It would have had to be a tandem, Lee, but I could have done it.
Well, Lee, that's pretty good. My flashback as a Mets fan, in the middle of the 86 World Series, a huge game, like Game 7, a guy parachuted right onto the second base bag in the middle of the game. Oh, it was unbelievable. And, of course, they arrested the guy right away. Remember there was the other guy that did it for the Evander Holyfield?
Yes.
Who was it? Riddick Bowe? Uh-huh. Was that who it was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Man. So you guys are taking right – this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it is going to be awesome. And then we got a post-game fireworks show, so that'll be fun as always. It's going to be a beautiful night. And then we got a varsity club tailgate for all of our former student athletes before the game, so they're all invited to come back to their old stomping grounds. Then during the game, we've got our beer garden in the south end zone has been upgraded. It's free for anybody to come down there. We got three local breweries serving some really unique beers We got Mayday, we've got Cedar Glade, and we've got Hop Springs. And then we also have on the other side, far away from the beer garden, is our family fun zone for all the young families and kids. I know that's where my 11-year-old and 7-year-old will be with inflatables and face painters and all that fun stuff. And then, of course, we got halftime, man, the Battle of the Bands, you know, the Band of Blue, and then Tennessee State's band is scheduled to come as well. So, you know, we're expecting all kinds of festivities before, during, and after the game, but mainly we just want people to come out. It's 615 night. It's Nashville. It's Murfreesboro. It's Rutherford County. It's Davidson County. We want everybody there. We need to have a great crowd for a really historic night.
That is going to be awesome. So, Lee, for people that want to get tickets, what's the easiest way to get them?
Easiest way is GoBlueRaiders.com. That's our website. Look at the top right corner for a tab that says tickets on it. Plenty of great seats still available, but we are expecting big crowds, so the earlier you get your tickets, the better. I would discourage people from just walking up and buying tickets at the gate because I think the lines will be long. Mm. So go online, get your tickets now, download them onto your phone, and you should be able to walk right in.
Perfect. Save a little time that way. Lee, it's a great place to watch the game. Great tradition there. I know it's going to be a lot of fun on Saturday. Thanks a lot for giving us a few details.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me, and let's hope for a great night for all the fans that show up, and let's hope for a Blue Raider win as well. Thanks, guys.
All right, Lee, thanks again. That's Assistant Athletic Director Lee DeLeon from over at Middle Tennessee. That's going to be a fun game. You love when the local teams play each other. That's exactly, always a really good thing. So, and I do remember back when they were both in the OVC, that used to be a heck of a rivalry. Kelly Holcomb played in that rivalry for several years there. Boots Donnelly was the coach at Middle Tennessee for a long time. So a lot of roots there with those two teams.
I don't understand, especially in this day and age, and listen, they might start it up, and they might do it in other states where there's a cluster of, you know, colleges with good programs, whether it be basketball or football, baseball, women's, it doesn't matter. I don't understand why they don't try to truly build those rivalries, those games up, whether it's TSU versus MTSU, TSU versus Vandy, Vandy versus MTSU. Name the schools that are in this area, you know, like within a 20-mile radius. I think that would, you know, that would benefit all schools.
Yeah, it gives you a local buzz.
Exactly. And it, like you said, like Lee said, you know, when you have those local schools playing one another, the crowds tend to be a little bit bigger, you know, because I can imagine TSU is going to come there and they're going to try to fill that place up, you know, and then obviously MTSU, you know, they don't want to be outdone, so their fans are going to come. So, like you said, it's going to be – it should be a packed house, but I don't understand why they don't do that more, you know?
Yeah, we love to see it here for sure. We'll talk to Eddie George about that at 1 o'clock. Before we move on to the 11 o'clock hour, we'll start talking some Titans here. What was your first impression of the announcer team, Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, and the whole Amazon streaming thing? It is interesting when – everything is originated by a stream. It is a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. One, you know, you better have good internet service because that stream will kind of pause on you.
Yeah.
And depending on how many televisions or what's running in the house, you know, you have kids.
Yeah.
Computers are on, cell phones are on, two computers are on, three computers are on. So it takes up, you know, the bandwidth of you know, your internet service. So you need to be mindful of that. But you can tell that the announcers, Herbstreit and
Al Michaels,
the legendary Al Michaels, you could tell they're still building chemistry. And, you know, they're not quite there yet. I'm sure by the end of the season, heck, by the middle of the season, they will be there because both of them are professionals. And it seems like they like each other. But you could tell that there is still this filling out period. I don't know when they actually brought the two together. I'm sure they had some test runs or whatnot. But you can never, you know, get a true test of how this is going to be until you actually do live games and things come up in live games. But then the halftime show, I thought that was a little bit, it was just like a hodgepodge. You know, they were just throwing, you know, I think Richard Sherman does a great job. I think Fitzpatrick does a great job, as well as who was the last the tight end
Gonzalez.
Yeah, Gonzalez. I think they're really good at what they do, but again, it's the, you know, chemistry part.
Yeah, you can't just throw anybody together.
They got to build the chemistry.
Sometimes you do.
You know how that is. Being an athlete,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just same thing with our show, right?
Exactly.
It has to build. Hopefully, you have it, and you can build on it. Sometimes it's apparent after a while that it's just not going to happen between a couple of different people. Where, like, I think it's a really interesting match. I'm Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, because they're both individually guys who have tremendous act. Now, Al Michaels, he is one of the, I would say, you could make the argument he's the greatest all-around play-by-play announcer of all time. Like, he's done all the sports at the highest level for such a long time, and he's been great all the time. And at his age, he amazes me that he continues to be very, very
sharp,
detailed. I don't think his game has slipped at all. Herbstreit's interesting because he's been such a college guy his entire time. So now he's making the adjustment to the pros, and I didn't think there was a big drop off there. The thing that I noticed, like you said, is just them working together. They don't work off of each other naturally yet, but we'll see how long it takes for them to get that. I do wonder the NFL people, viewers, media people, critics, all that stuff, who don't really watch a lot of college football, and those people are out there. I know we're in the South.
Yeah.
We all watch college football on Saturday. And then pro. But in the North, there are a lot of places that in the NFL markets. They're just not into college football. They probably haven't watched Kirk Herbstreit very much, and they're going, what does this guy know about the NFL? I've never heard of this guy, you know, because he's not a former NFL player.
Exactly.
But he is a really solid broadcaster.
Yes, he does a good job. So it will be a lot of people will be paying attention as they move forward on how the chemistry is built. Great. I mean, that's a hard job to do, but I think, you know, having Al Michaels there, who's a legend, and then having Kurt, who has been doing this for such a long time, now he gets to come into another arena, which is the NFL arena. He's great in a college arena, and I'm sure he will do equally as good a job in the pro arena as he does week in and week out in the college arena.
When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the Titans over at the practice complex. They'll have some press conferences. We'll get you a taste of that during this coming hour here. We'll also check in with Joe Dubin and set the table on the high school front tonight. That'll be at about 11:45. And don't forget, Ask D. Mace at 12:30, Eddie George at 1, and then Daily Trivia at 1:30. We're doing it all here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game.